You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and RadioReverb.com online. Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HIV and living a healthy life. It's the HIV Hour. On today's show, we feature a rundown of the latest news and talking points about living with HIV from the Brighton area and the world at large. Also, information on Brighton's HIV organisations and some other events. Do email us at hivhour@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter at @HIV_hour and Instagram at @HIVHour. If you miss the show on a Thursday at 7 p.m, then you can listen again at 4 p.m. on Monday and at noon on Tuesday, or indeed catch up with an older show by going to the Listen Again page on RadioReverb.com.
Good evening. It's just me and Sue today. It's the Sue and Josh show.
It's the Sue and Josh show. I like the sound of that, Josh.
Yes.
Say that too many times, the other presenters might get a bit jealous. But it's quite a busy time of the year, and a lot of the guys are out and about doing stuff for the run-up to World AIDS Day. So probably expected around about this time of the year. But hey-ho, you know, they're going to be back next time. So, yeah.
So it's World AIDS Day, Sue. So, build-up.
It is a big build-up. Did you know, Josh, did you know that? When the last, the year of the last, the first World AIDS Day. I'm testing your knowledge, aren't I?
Well, it would have been in the 80s, wouldn't it?
1988.
Right. And where was that?
I believe that was Brighton. And I'll tell you how I found that out. I attended a talk at the history of the Brighton History Museum. Well, it was at the museum in Brighton, and I was doing a talk there. And actually, I can't remember the guy's name. He came on our show once before, and he was talking about the history of HIV.
Of the Floric.
Yes, yeah, and some of the stuff that he had back, you know, the newspaper cuttings he was showing, and oh my goodness, it really sort of tingled me, you know, and it really made me think. Were people really like that only those years ago? And then they were, because they've got documented evidence what they were saying about the gay community and about communities and they were awful. And so yeah, so how, that's why I know I'm showing off. That's why I know the first World AIDS Day was 1988. So
that wasn't worldwide, was it?
I won't say that. That may be definite, but you know, the first, I believe the first one in the UK. I think it was the first one in the UK. So, that was really interesting. So, and as you know, I attended there myself. I done a bit of a story as well. So,
we're going to talk about that later on. We're going to have a chat about it.
We are.
So, thank you for listening, tuning in to our listeners. It's just a busy build-up, I think. Last week I went to the Beaver Conference in London.
Oh, yes. How was that, Josh?
It was good, actually. I've never done anything like that before. And I was speaking, because I'm on the injectables, which everybody knows, but constantly talking about my posterior. This time I've got it in already, so that's good.
Yeah.
And I was just going there with a guy called Jonathan Roberts, who's my nurse at the Lawson Unit, which is HIV clinic in Brighton, and they were doing a talk about the injectables to nurses and doctors and professionals from around the country. So, and I was just saying about my experience on the injectables. Mm-hmm. So, it's been 3 months, so it was quite a big thing. Yeah, I enjoyed it, and I was quite surprised how many people had listened to the show, which was amazing.
Oh, fantastic!
Wow. Yeah, and I got the show out there, which was good. Just to, you know, get it promoted a little bit, which is great. A lot of people didn't know about it. A lot of people had seen it and listened to it. So, it was good. And it's just interesting because they're all professionals. And I think to hear someone who's going through that kind of, medication treatment.
Yeah.
Ground level, isn't it? So
It is. And you have quite a big audience.
I'd say there's about over 100 people there.
Oh, that's quite a lot of people, isn't it? So you spoke at, were you on stage and a mic?
Yeah. So we were the first on, so I had to get up really early. to get there, and there was four of us, and there's like a table, and then we stood at the what do you call it? I can't remember.
The podium.
That's it.
Podium.
And Jonathan just asked me a question, like, are we having a chat? And apparently it went really well, and people were interested, and so good.
Good.
So it's good to do these things. I think, it's just get out there and
But would you ever have thought years ago we'd ever be able to take an injection, HIV medication? We would never have thought about that. I mean, it just amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing. Yeah. And the guy from Gilead was on there, the drug company, and they were talking about what they're doing for the injectables in lots of different ways and different different drugs to do long-lasting injectables. I think
long-lasting injectables. Yeah, uh-huh. And were they talking about maybe it goes on longer than 2 months, 3 months, 6 months? Is that the vision? Can you remember? Yeah.
Vision. They're kind of looking into longer, really longer, so you don't have to have the injection so much. Uh-huh.
Like you have a slow release, you know. Amazing.
I'm shocked how it works, to be honest. But
I know.
The only thing I was not concerned about, I knew about this, but the adherence after the first year. In the second year, there was 1 in 70 people become got adhere to it. So I think it goes down. I think after 3 years, it's 1 in 30. So that's something to keep an eye on.
Yes.
But the thing is, there's options. You don't, once you've gone on to if it doesn't work, then you go back onto treatment again. So they're very aware of that kind of what's going to happen.
Yes. Uh-huh. And you never know, in a few years' time, there could be more research, that would be more progress. And,
it's early days with it, isn't it?
It's early days, you're right, yeah.
So, so this is a World AIDS Day special, the second one, isn't it? So we're going to just, I've talked to you about your story a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got a bit of community news, and so throughout the show we've got sound bites. We ask people what does World AIDS Day mean to them, so we have got a few people just saying their thoughts on today, and at the end we've got a bit of Philip Ragg from THT who's going to talk about what's going on with World AIDS Day. So
wonderful.
So hi, Gillian. What does World AIDS Day mean to you?
Well, World AIDS Day is a real opportunity to reflect back over where we've come from to where we are now, and also to think, you know, looking forward, what we can achieve. And, you know, it's exciting times, isn't it, that we have the tools now to end new HIV transmissions.
Yes.
So we're really gearing up to that. The target is 2030, and I think we're well on our way in Brighton and Hove.
HIVR is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
So welcome back to the HIV Hour on 97.2 FM and DAB and on our famous podcasts. So today we're going to, on this second part of World AIDS Day specials, we're going to have our very own Miss Sue. So Sue, this World AIDS Day, you did a talk on Sunday, last Sunday, didn't you?
I did, yes.
What was that about?
That was to do with, obviously, I didn't really know too much about it, and it was really quite interesting. Apparently that it's had meetings once a month, and it's the HIV History Club in Brighton, and they have all different speakers come along, you know. Really interesting talk. Quite a lot of people came and had a great audience. And I've done something quite special this year, because obviously, as you know, Josh, I go out and I'm a public speaker for the Terence Higgins Trust, and, you know, part of an amazing project that is educating people about HIV, you know, trying to normalize a virus that any of us can live with. And really quite passionate, Josh, that our young people, you know, I mean, I'm talking about, you know, young people that leave an education, leave with the tools, the information to take away the fear. I mean, you know, from our own, all our own experiences, you know, when we were first diagnosed and what we went through, and perhaps, you know, I know I've got many friends within the LGBT plus community, and I hear some of their stories where they were really scared and frightened at school, and they didn't even want to come out about their sexuality. And I want to try and change some of that. I want to try and make sure that, you know, young people have got a right to speak up and be proud of whoever they are and whatever they live with, and maybe something later on in life, you know. So, so I'm really quite passionate going into a school setting. World AIDS Day is always quite a poignant time, like it is for many of us living with HIV. Yeah. Quite a poignant time. I don't know why, but it just is, you know, obviously we think about our status all the time, and because we're, you know, some of us are still coming to terms, you know, with the diagnosis after many years. And I suppose it's a slight, a wee bit of a trigger for me personally. It's sort of, you know, you think back and, you know, I've been diagnosed, you know, 17 and a half years ago. And I actually sometimes have to pinch myself because it just feels like yesterday. That's how still it is, you know. And I just really wanted to commemorate someone incredibly special that lost his life to HIV. And I thought, you know, to commemorate him, to talk about him, and perhaps just start with when he first knocked on my door one day, Josh. And I'd just come out of the marriage. I'd met this lovely guy who I'm going to be talking about. His name was Christopher. And, you know, he just sort of was just gone through a divorce, and he'd had a daughter the similar age to mine. And we met in really similar circumstances. So we really sort of had that immediate connection. So we had a really nice relationship. You know, we were together for about a year. And I always remember, I mean, I'm a lover of Will Young. And I always remember, Josh, that on our first proper date together, you know what I mean.
I haven't dated for years, so it's been a long time.
And we had,
I kind of remember.
We went to a club, we had dinner, and we went back to his place, quite frankly. And
as you do.
And the thing is, it was a beautiful summer evening, and I didn't know that he also liked Will Young as well, and he'd just recently got Will Young's first album, because we all know that, you know, Will, you know, became incredibly famous from Popeye. Mm. And and I remember he put the CD, you know, when CDs were still around. I'm sure they are still around a bit, but, you know, the CD went on, and he came, you know, this amazing song, Evergreen. And I mean, I've loved Will Young ever since. And we were dancing in the lounge, Josh.
Oh, lovely.
You know, and it was an absolute beautiful evening. And so, you know, that was the first night of many. And, you know, that relationship went on for about a year. And, you know, due to my own sort of personal circumstances with, you know, I had a young daughter at the time, Josh, you know, she was struggling with, you know, the separation from her father. I was still sort of mentally coming to terms with the separation and the divorce of my husband, my first husband. Yeah. So all of that. And so I decided, you know, I just wanted to just come away. My divorce was just going through, and we'd spent a lovely year together. And I just decided, you know, we kept friends, we kept in contact with each other. And so I started to rebuild my life in the next few months. I found a place for myself and my daughter, and you know, my next step of my life started. And then I'd heard that my ex-partner, well, Christopher, had been ill. I'd heard he'd been in the hospital. I'd heard he'd had pneumonia. I'd heard he'd been off work. You know, this was from a few friends. And I was really a bit worried about him.
Yeah, I was going to ask that, yeah. So were you worried?
Yes, you know, because, you know, I think as you grow older later on in life, you know, you don't break up because, you know, when we're young and foolish, you know, oh, it's just another one, you know, But, you know, he was a really special guy, but it just wasn't the time to make that next step, if you know what I mean. So So I remember one afternoon, late afternoon, it must have been my day off or whatever, I can't remember now. But I heard this knocking at the door, the knocking at my front door, and I opened it, and he's standing there. And I got such a shock, Josh. You know, I always remember Christopher. He was always such a handsome man, very bit 6 foot something tall. And I'm a bit of a shorty, so he looked even taller. But you know, he was, you know, nice physique. He was lovely, a gorgeous smile. And he looked so different. He looked quite pale. He looked quite pasty. He looked quite thin. And I went, oh. You know, as I opened the door, and obviously he came in and we had a bit of a cuddle and that. And, you know, I always remember going in the kitchen and putting the kettle on and bringing some biscuits out. And we're sitting on the sofa and we're talking. And then he said, and he begins to tell me how unwell he has been and how he had just recently come out of hospital and getting over pneumonia. And then he comes to tell me, he said, Sue, he said, I really want to let you know, one of the tests they've done for me in hospital with the HIV. Before he said anything else, Josh, I'm thinking, what the devil is he talking to me about that for? Now, hey, look, I'm a girl of the 80s, 70s. I remember that campaign that was out in 1980. Oh, I can't remember what you know, don't die. And I remember, you know, the leaflets coming through the door, my mother, and I always remember my mother grabbing that leaflet and running to the letterbox when this leaflet came through the door, saying, that's not going to happen in this house. That's not going to happen, as if to say, that doesn't belong. And that, you know, we're talking about a generation before mine, and I'm a bit older, as you know. So, and I always remember, and that sort of triggered my mind, and I thought, well, you know, my mother said that was not going to happen in this. That, you know, what's he talking about? You know, it only happens. And I'll be honest, Josh, I'm going to be totally honest. I thought, you know, HIV happened in the gay community because that is the knowledge and that is the information I had. So he said, and I've been diagnosed with HIV. And I just literally broke and I just went absolute. And I went, and he said, I really want you to go for a test. I said, well, the thing is, I feel totally fine. There's nothing wrong with me. And the thing is, Josh, I did feel totally fine. And there wasn't anything wrong with me. I wasn't ill. I remember back at the time I was feeling one of my best I'd ever been. I'd always worked out. I always ate well. I always, you know, and I remember at that particular time in my life feeling absolutely wonderful. And that's the truth.
Did you, did you, because you thought that it just happened to gay people, did you think, well, why has he, Christopher, got this? Did that go through your head?
Imagine the millions of things that were going on in my head. I thought, well, is he not the person I thought he was? Has he lied to me? You know, all of those millions of things that those, oh, these judgments. And I honestly, and obviously now thinking about it, my head was shameful at that time. Mm. The thoughts and feelings I had in it. And, you know, he stayed for about an hour or so and he got up to leave and he goes to the front door. And just before he goes out, he turns back to me and he says, you will go for a test, Sue, won't you? Please go for a test. And I remember one of the last things I said to him, I'm fine, I'll be okay, you know. But you know what, Josh? That was the last time I ever saw him again.
Oh.
The last time I ever spoke to him, because he ended up back in hospital with pneumonia again. And this time you couldn't shake it off.
Oh.
He was too ill to take any form of medication and he died 2 weeks later.
Oh, sad.
And that was absolutely devastating. Yeah, you know. Yeah. And you know, he was 43 years of age, Josh. He had a 15-year-old daughter. He died far too soon before his time. Mm. He was a brave, beautiful person. And his courage, because, you know, let's think about it. He didn't have to come and knock on my door that day and explode my world, which he did.
I was going to say, yeah. Well, I mean, takes some guts to do that, doesn't it?
You know, his love and his bravery, and I will never ever forget him. And it was quite strange because you know I do a lot of work in our schools, and I've just said, and I was I've just recently done one of our Brighton schools. I love doing the Brighton schools, and this young man, I always call them young men, you know, even if they're 12 and 13, you know,
young
man of the future. He was right at the front, and I sort of told my story, and we went on to Q&A, and he put his hand up, and he said, can I ask you, he said, if your ex-partner hadn't have knocked on your door that day, do you think you would have ever gone for a test? Mm. And you know what, Josh, no one's ever asked me that before. I've always thought that, but no one's ever said to me, do you think? And you know what, the answer I said to him, I said, I'll be absolutely honest, no, I wouldn't have done.
Right.
Because I thought I was invincible. I thought, first of all, I was well and I was healthy and I was living my best life even back then. I thought I knew everything. I didn't think I had to because of the information. Do I blame other people? Do I blame the system? Do I blame whatever? But that's how it was. And you know what? If he hadn't have knocked on my door that day, Josh, to encourage me to go for a test, I'll be absolutely truthfully honest, I may not be here today.
So in a way, he saved your life, in a way, didn't he? Because if that's, you can say that, can't we?
Absolutely. And you know what? The family ordered an autopsy because they couldn't believe he had HIV. They couldn't believe he had HIV. And through, you know, the state of his organs and his, you know, as we know, that's what HIV does. It sort of gets into the immune system, destroys it. That's what it wants to do, isn't it? You know, from about the state of his organs, they predicted on what they saw that he'd been living with HIV. Only estimate, because nothing's guaranteed on, you know, he'd been living with HIV for about 6 years. So, yeah, so that was only estimate. So, but do you know what I think? Obviously, because you know me very well, Josh. I've been working in the HIV sector for a long time now. And obviously, I've educated myself about the virus and everything possible I can get into my brain I want to know about. And I'll tell you what. He was showing specific signs and symptoms throughout our relationship.
Right. You didn't know, did you? You didn't know that, did you? Because you didn't know anything.
Just hot for me.
Yeah.
Waking up, no, honestly, Josh, waking up in the night, waking up in the morning, and the bed is saturated. I think, it's been quite hot out there, and he's just sweated.
No, those signs.
Constant, you know, he was getting these constant chest infection. I just brushed them off. He's just, you know, perhaps he's not got a very good immune system. He was showing specific signs and symptoms through our relationship. And I feel incredibly guilty that I wish I'd known what I know now, but you know, you can't go back. You can't, you know, but so.
That's led to what you do now though, hasn't it? That not a very nice incident, and it wasn't a very nice experience, was it? But it's led you to do such amazing stuff now. So, you know.
You know what, Josh? Do you know what I think? Now, this is personal. So if any medical people are listening, and this is just personally what I think, I'll tell you what I think. Now, we're going back 17 and a half years. Okay, so obviously we know we're a bit more better in the understanding of where HIV can happen. You know, we're a bit, thank goodness, and we need to do more. We know. But if it was even more backwards back then, I honestly believe he was seen to be in a non-risk community. I'm sorry, but that's what I personally think. I honestly that, you know, he was shown specific signs and symptoms. You know, he ended up in hospital, literally doing one test after another. And my thought is they've probably done a HIV test because they've done everything else. And I don't mean to pull down our health aid, because I'm here because of our healthcare system, and I praise them every single day. They didn't have the information, maybe the knowledge that, you know, HIV can happen to heterosexual people. So I'm incredibly passionate of making sure within the heterosexual community, I say to them, do not think you're special enough not to be ever affected by the HIV virus if you're heterosexual. Look at me. You know, I assumed, I presumed I had the wrong information back then. And I want to make sure that other people, not just in the heterosexual community, all of our communities, we all need to get the proper correct information, you know?
It's a human thing. It's not a...
Yeah.
It's all human.
I know. And you're right. That is one of the reasons I stand up and I literally do put myself out there. And I something took over me when I got diagnosed, Joss. It was like, a trigger went off in my head. You know, I cannot be the only person not knowing what I should know. And obviously throughout the years, I've met many, many people that have known less than me. And I just became incredibly passionate. I started volunteering at the Terence Higgins Trust. That's where it all started. You know, I'd closed down a big career I'd had for many, many years, a career I'd loved, closed it down, couldn't face it, didn't want to do it. And I started volunteering at the time at the Terence Higgins Trust. I'd never heard of the Terence Higgins Trust. I thought, what's this charity? And I got, I remember knocking on the door, Ship Street in Brighton, the Terence Higgins Trust. I met some really great people there at the time, and I come across this project, Positive Voices. I think it was called something else back then, Positive Bureau or something. It was only six years. And there was a couple of lovely gay guys doing a lovely job going into a couple of schools. You know, there was no funding. There was no, you know, they just, and, but there was no women. There was no diverse communities on the project. So that I came on and I thought, oh, I can do that. I can talk, you know. But it took me a bit of a journey to get there. I mean, I remember the first year of diagnosis, I had counselling and that really did help. And that was from the Terence Higgins Trust. So I really, you know, and you know what I found in my counselling, Josh, that I thought that they're going to be talking about HIV and they're going to be talking about how I handle it. HIV wasn't mentioned. And I found that really quite, wow, you know, it was all about acceptance of who you are now and, you know, what you, yeah, it was really, really quite helpful. You know, my family got involved with it as in, you know, I spoke about my family in ways I hadn't spoken about it before. So, you know, if anyone's maybe newly diagnosed and they're listening in, from someone that thought, well, what's this counselling all about? You know, it's just a load of talking. And I'll be honest,
it's very powerful.
Really, really recommend, you know, especially when someone's newly diagnosed and, you know, they're trying to come to terms with, you know, and because I went through a lot of self-blame and self, you know, I hated myself. I used to say to myself, what have I done to myself? What have I allowed to do to myself? And that's, you know, I was punishing myself, you know, I've had too many boyfriends, I've had too much sex. And I thought, well, lots of people do that. And I was obviously after the years I learned to come to terms with that. And I started punishing and blaming myself. And I say to myself now, I was just unlucky.
Yeah.
And unprotected sex, Josh, and that's it.
Yeah. That's,
you know.
So I think Christopher would be very proud of you there. What do you think?
And I'm, you know, for his family as well, for his daughter. I've often seen it, and you know, a chill goes down my. You know, I've seen a grown up now, and a chill goes through me. And at least I know that I'm trying to do something right and good, you know, for future. And that gives me solace, and that gives me something good. I know that I'm doing, you know, it gives me peace and solace. That's what I was trying to say. But the song, I think I've mentioned, you know, that evergreen, it gets me every single time. And I went to see Will Young a few weeks ago.
Oh, right. Yeah, he was in Brighton, wasn't he?
Yeah, I was at front row seats, and he was absolutely amazing. That, you know, where, oh my God, when one of the first songs he came to sing was Evergreen, and I just literally, oh my George!
You're tearing up, Sue.
And I was on my own because I just wanted to go on my own. It was absolutely amazing. But, yeah, I just wanted to sell. I haven't really spoken about them in this detail before, and I just wanted to celebrate him and just talk about him. And he's not forgotten, and he will never, ever be forgotten.
Radio Reverb. Radio Reverb.
What does World AIDS Day mean to you, Stephen?
To me, it's a way of remembering my first partner and the situations that we were in when the treatment was worse than the disease, I think. And it cost him his life. I think the combination of the two, the sort of lack of knowledge of how much drug to give people.
And, what was his name?
Andrew. Yeah, first love of my life, person I've ever loved. And it wasn't an easy relationship, but that love goes on. And every time World AIDS Day comes around, you know, he's always in my mind. You know, it was a special relationship, traumatic but wonderful in so many ways.
Good memories as well.
Good memories and bad memories, yeah.
Thank you, Stephen.
You're welcome.
Yes, yeah, so welcome back to the HIV. That was very came from the heart, didn't it?
Yes, I think, like I said about it in the interview, I don't, you know, obviously, as you know, I'm a public speaker and I do talk about my journey of HIV, but there's certain things I keep to myself, certain, you know, memories, because, you know, but I just thought, you know, with it being past 17 years, I just wanted to celebrate him and commemorate him at the same time. And I just thought it was nice just to put more of a profile behind the person that literally is the cause of me being here today. And it's not being dramatic. It's not being, oh my God. It literally, yeah, he's responsible for me sitting here, you know, talking to the listeners today. And of course I will be truly grateful and obviously of his passing as well. That's something I will live with, and I will, you know, but, you know, his family are feeling it worse as well. But yeah, I just thought it was a nice gesture for World AIDS Day, because, you know, World AIDS Day, some people don't think about it. Some people don't refuse to think about it because of the pain. And I totally understand that, you know, they may have lost some people in their lives. And I mean, what about you, Josh? What is it? You know, we say this all the time, you know, what does it mean to you?
Yeah, obviously it's funny with me, isn't it? Because I'm always asking everybody else.
I know.
I've never told my story.
Uh-huh.
So this is, I am really interested in doing positive voices, and it's taking me time.
Yeah.
I've never really, I'd rather, it's really interesting, but I'd rather listen to everybody else what they think, rather than me saying. So I think it's like what everybody else says. It's you just reflect on people. I mean, I don't know. I knew a few people who died, but not close friends. I knew them in Brighton, so
Mm-hmm.
It's just nice to commemorate people's lives, and also to remember them. I think, and that's an amazing thing to do. But I think Tony's. Hello, Tony.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, guys. Sorry.
That's all. We were just talking, obviously, being World AIDS then, we were just asking ourselves what it meant to us, you know, on a personal note.
Yeah.
What does it mean to you, Tony?
I think it means remembering the struggle that people had in the 80s and 90s. Like, mm-hmm. I think, like Josh was saying, it's remembering the people that we've lost and the people that are still battling through AIDS now. And also, although the therapies and the ARV therapy and the injections are really amazing, I think it's good to remember what people went through in the 80s and 90s with the early medications and how that's affecting them now. And I think it makes me really thankful that, you know, my doctors were really on the ball and got me on meds pretty soon.
Do you have a private moment? Do you have a private memory, or you just, let's just get the day over? Do you know what I mean?
I remember very clearly when they told me, and I was in a car driving around the M25 when they told me I was positive, and it was to go and work for a Middle Eastern airline, and obviously that was that. My contract was cancelled straight away, but it just always reminds me of that day. That you know, that'll stick in my, it's ingrained, it's burnt in my memory. But yeah, no, I just on the day I sort of take half an hour out and just do a bit of meditation and just, you know, think about all those that don't have. I mean, we have quite a good HIV support system in the UK, and I just worries me that, you know, countries that aren't as developed as we are, you know, how they cope, and you know, it always makes me think, you know, we do have it pretty easy over here.
Very nice work.
I was just thinking about my, when I got diagnosed. So I didn't think anything. And I went and I went and told my partner, and it didn't really register. And then I think that's when my trouble started. Mentally, and that's when I started to needed to sort things out in my head about myself, and that started my journey with you know, therapy and understanding. I'm still on that journey. I think we're all still on.
Yeah, I think so.
But, I think people don't give it enough credence. Is that the right word? But I don't think people just think, oh, you take your meds, you're fine. But I think you hit the nail on the head. It's the mental stuff that, you know, you start. I kind of unraveled for a little bit and kind of gathered myself up, and then I was all right. But yeah, like Josh says, you know, it's all the mental stuff. It's the, oh my God, if I disclose, you know, it's disclosing to people, because I was always told by my very first nurse, Tina, she said, as soon as you disclose to someone, it's that, and it's their information to tell anyone else. So you have to be really careful of who you tell. I think that's, you know, late 90s. So,
yeah, that's late 90s. Yeah.
Well, I got told not to tell anybody. So that was like, I didn't get told. I wasn't forced not to tell anyone. I wasn't like held down. But at that time, I just was thinking, yeah, I was a bit vulnerable and think, yes, that's what I need to do. Because, and it was, I think it was the worst decision, really, because I spent four or five years not saying anything to anybody, and what sent me a bit twist.
Mentally, get that.
But then when you look around the world, people don't have, as you said earlier, Tony, people don't have that support network. They don't have, they can't go to therapy, they can't start access to that kind of thing. So it's a lot harder, as you said, in different countries than what we here. We have got a great network, haven't we?
So what does World AIDS Day mean to you?
Well, it's a celebration of life, and it's a celebration of the hardship and strength of people that went through a certain period of time where the HIV/AIDS crisis, there were no drugs, treatment and services directed towards HIV people impacted by HIV/AIDS. So what World AIDS Day means to me is a day of remembering, not forgetting what people went through, and celebrating the people that have lived and lived through a crisis of our time, which is predominantly impacts people who identify maybe as a non-normative gender and sexual identity. So for me, it's a celebration and an acknowledgement of the losses that people have faced and moved through together as a community.
Radio Reverb 97.2.
Hi, if you've just tuned in, this is the HIVR on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and .com online. You can always get us on our famous podcast.
Fabulous. Well, it's not just the Sue and Josh show. It's the Sue, Josh and Tony show, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thanks for you were on the call, were you, Tony, earlier?
Sorry, I was on a call, so I come in at the last second. Sorry.
Yeah. We're glad to have you on board.
Very nicely too.
So there's a few things that, I mean, obviously, well, these days the vigil's been on, so it's just, there is something on Sunday, December the 4th, which is the World AIDS Day Service of Remembrance and Hope, and that's at the Dorset Gardens Methodist Church, so if you want to go down there, that's in Dorset Gardens. So that'll be a nice event, and that's at 6 p.m. mm-hmm. on the Sunday 4th. Actually, just so we'll just listen to Philip Ragg, actually, from THT, yeah. Who just had a little interview with him, little vox pops mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. what's happening.
Good.
So I'm with Philip Ragg for Terence Higgins Trust. You've been setting up the vigil and sorting that out. How's it been this year?
Yeah, it's been great. So the Brighton Hope World AIDS Day Planning Partnership have been meeting for several months now. So that is a partnership made up of all the kind of key HIV organisations in Brighton, like Terence Higgins Trust, the Six Beacon, Lunch Positive.
The work
could go on. but a great partnership. So we meet on a monthly basis to plan the vigil, make sure that everything's in place to make the event as successful as possible.
Yeah, that's great. So you're having a fundraiser at Our Bar?
Yes, Thursday night from 8 o'clock. We will be at Our Bar. Terence Higgins Trust Outreach Team will be there doing HIV testing. And Our Bar will be taking donations and doing special drinks offers and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's good. There's a lot on this year, isn't there? It seems to be a lot more than...
Lots of fundraising events, not just for us, but for Six Beacon as well. So all sorts going on.
Which is really good, isn't it?
It's good. It's fantastic.
Why is it so important to have these events, Philip?
I think World AIDS Day is still important as a time to kind of reflect and to remember those that we've lost to HIV and AIDS, but also a time to kind of think about how things are changing. It's not all negative, and HIV is changing, and the people it's affecting are changing as well. Yeah. Major developments in medication, major developments in testing. So, you know, our role here at Terence Higgins Trust is just to encourage as many people to get tested as possible, whilst also supporting people living with HIV to make their lives as problem-free as possible.
Yeah,
as well.
You do that really well, so yes, thank you.
Thank you very much.
So what does World AIDS mean to you as a person, on a personal note, to you? What does it mean to you on World AIDS Day?
I think I've been working in HIV now for 25 years, and it's always a time to just think about how things have changed, you know, from the kind of nightmare days of the 80s and early 90s where we saw so much loss. Yeah. And now things are changing and things are really looking very positive. Brighton and Hove is one of the fast track cities in terms of HIV, and I think Brighton is really an amazing city in terms of the way that sexual health organisations work together, and we all have the same kind of goal as well, which is really important.
And we all work together. It's like a little team, isn't it?
I feel like I know exactly what's going on around the city, so that's fantastic.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The HIV Hour, positively helping to change hearts and minds.
I'm with Heather Leek-Dade. Heather, what does the World AIDS Day mean to you?
World AIDS Day is a time to remember. I particularly remember those people I have known and worked with who've died with HIV over the last 30-odd years. And it's also a time to remind people of the importance of tackling stigma and prejudice and of educating themselves about HIV and marking World AIDS Day as a community.
Thank you.
7.2 Radio Reverb.
I've got a little poem to read, which I've read before, but it's called The Flame. Silently we stand together, staring into the flame. As the air caresses our face, we gather alone, but in unity, to remember the fallen, the ones we love with grace. Each name represents a son, a daughter, a lifelong friend. And as we remember the light that was, that light awakened from purest love. We will remember and never forget those who left us too soon. No matter where we may be, from all corners of the globe, though time will pass us by, we will stand together and commemorate thee.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that was lovely.
Very appropriate.
Yeah, good.
I'm just thinking, Josh, that might be a bit of a shout out for our listeners. Do you have any wonderful poems that are so poignant and that we could even read out on the show? How about that?
Contact the HIV Hour at gmail.com.
You know, let us know. We're here for you as well. That would be lovely, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
And if you want to come on the show or just want to, tune in and do anything, if you want to tell your story, then again, contact us in the email, or you can go on Twitter, which is HIV_hour, and Facebook, which is, let's get this right, at HIV Hour Reverb, and join our, you can join our Facebook page, which would be lovely. Yeah, and also our podcast.
Yeah.
So thanks for tuning in. Bye, everyone. Thanks.
Take care, everybody.
Bye. HIVR is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.